ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Matt Barry.
It is another Monday edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Special guest Greg McElroy joining me today. McElroy, man, we appreciate you making some time on this lovely program of ours.
I've been listening to you guys all year long, and I finally get the invite right after the regular season. So it seems, you know, like a really appropriate time to have on, you know, one of your guests. I really appreciate you finally considering me after weeks and weeks and weeks of hoping to get the ask.
Look, McElroy and Matt, more than a guest, it's going to be an institution going forward. You're not going to know how much you want it until you don't have it. But before we move on, two things to get out of the way. Listen to SV Pod with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve. New episodes every Tuesday morning. Follow SV Pod wherever you listen to podcasts. And the annual NBA on Christmas Day tradition continues. Five of the best gifts anyone could ask for. The star-studded schedule starts at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. On ESPN with the Hawks taking on the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Then over on ABC, Celtics square off against the Bucks, followed by the Suns hosting the Warriors. Later on ABC on ESPN, the Nets battle the Lakers, with the day capped off by the Mavs clashing with the Jazz at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific on ESPN. Now that we got the programming notes out of the way, we also got the first full weekend of the College Football Bowl schedule. We learned a lot, I think, in this first week in a bowl games, McElroy. What stood out to you in this first full week in a bowl action?
Never doubt the underdogs.
Yeah.
I mean, more than anything else, that was it. Because, and we've always said it, and I remember the first time someone brought this to my attention, you know, we were making picks, and I feel like it was actually probably one of my first things I ever did at ESPN. I wasn't even employed by the company, but I was filling in. And I was talking to Lou Holtz. That's right. That's an appropriate name drop. Let me just pick up the names. And he said, look, when you're picking these games, son, you always pick the underdogs. I go, what are you talking about? Bowl season, underdogs, time. They're going to sell that they can't play, sell that they're never going to win, no chance. They're going to – and the dogs come out, and they'll come out howling. Well, that's exactly what happened this time around. Dogs right now through the first weekend, 6-2 against the spread, 4-4 straight up. And that's including a couple of remarkable, remarkable upsets. Jackson State at 11-1 getting absolutely smoked. And then nobody thought Middle Tennessee was going to be able to knock off Toledo. And sure enough, that's exactly what they did. You were there in lovely Bahamas for the Bahamas Bowl. So pretty wild to see what we've seen here in the first few days. And I would expect much to continue over the next few as well.
Yeah, UAB over BYU was another stunner to me. And when you look at it, and we say this all the time, whatever TV show we're hosting or radio show that we're on, bowl games are as hard to predict as they are easy in the standpoint of when you look at it, and I'm always careful of how I say this, and I was careful about saying it on the air during the Bahamas Bowl between UTSA and Toledo because I didn't want to infer that Toledo didn't want to be there. But you can always figure out which team wants to be at the bowl game just by watching it. Because for some schools, it's everything. Tennessee State,
question.
MTSU was on their fourth string quarterback. They had to win in the final week to even get to that point. So the fact that they had an opportunity, you know what I mean? I mean, Utah State, the game you were in, the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl, that was a big thing for Blake Anderson and that program and the turnaround that they had had this season. So bowl games are fun to watch because you always get an idea of who it means more to, especially in these early bowls when you're dealing with 6-6, 7-5, and 8-4 teams.
Well, the one thing I'll say about the early Christmas bowls is that more often than not, now, are there rare examples in which teams feel as though, oh, we got slighted? Did BYU feel that way?
Yes.
And being the top 13 team in the country, having to go to Shreveport, nothing wrong with Shreveport. It's a lovely place. To all of our wonderful friends in Shreveport, we're happy to come and visit, eat the delicious food, and play and win money on some of the wonderful tables there. So I'm absolutely all for Shreveport without question. But I think BYU looked at it and said, well, why are we playing UAB? Why are we – we've already beaten everyone there is to beat in the Pac-12.
We're the Pac-12 South champ.
You've been saying that all – you being an Arizona State guy, saying that BYU is the Pac-12 South champions, it's like you're stabbing yourself in the back. Like, you got to help me understand where that's coming from.
I'm a truth seeker, McElroy. I mean, let me just run you down BYU's schedule. They beat Arizona, Pac-12 South, win. They beat Utah.
Count. Arizona barely counts. Come on.
They beat Utah, Pac-12 South champ, Pac-12 champion. They beat Utah 26-17. They beat Arizona State 27-17. They beat Washington State 21-19. They beat USC 35-31. They won the Pac-12.
You won't find much pushback from me. I love what Kalani Sitake did this year. However, I think they felt a little bit like we're just going to show up and we're going to smoke UAB. Who is this, UAB? Who are these guys? And UAB, this was arguably the biggest win in school history. I mean, make the case.
I don't think it's any question, but you're talking about a team that waltzed into that game 10-2 in BYU. They were a great story throughout the season. And I'm with you. BYU maybe thinks maybe we belong in the Holiday Bowl. Maybe we belong in a bigger game closer to New Year's. And you get against a UAB team, and you know this, being a former player, there's nothing more dangerous than a team that feels like they are getting looked at and saying, hey, you don't belong. BYU is going to smoke you. You've got no
100%.
Opportunity. This is a football program that got rid of football 6 years ago.
Right.
And being there against BYU, I mean, that's to me, and I said this on the broadcast of the Bahamas Bowl. People say there's too many bowls. There's no such thing as too many bowls. Because if there were too many bowls, that Independence Bowl may not exist. And that's the best win, as you said, in UAB history.
Well, and for those that say there's too many bowls and they don't matter, ask the players. Ask the players. And especially the ones that people usually make fun of are the ones that usually reside on that first Saturday of bowl season. Everyone's going to poke fun at it. Oh, well, who's the sponsor this year? You know, like it, and ultimately, and when we talked and we did the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl presented by Stiefel, make sure we get all the sponsors in there.
And
we were talking with players on both teams and coaches on both teams that in their illustrious history, and some would say illustrious, I happen to think if you play football for 130 years, pretty dang good. Both Utah State had been playing since 1892, and then you have Oregon State had been playing since 1893. Oregon State was playing their 18th bowl game. And then on the other side, Utah State, it was their ninth in the last 11 seasons, but historically they'd played in only 15 bowl games. So these are not things that are easily attainable. Now, okay, if you're, say, Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, Florida State, whatever, yes, going to a bowl game is a foregone conclusion. So when you reach that six-win plateau, it's just another walk in the park. But for the teams that don't get the opportunity to showcase their program on ABC, for the teams that would do anything to have a primetime opportunity on ESPN on a Saturday, this was massive for them. And even teams, by the way, Matt, talk about Louisiana, who really looked subpar for 3.5 quarters. They flexed there at the end. With all the success they've had, being ranked in the top 25 and having great wins against Iowa State and having Billy Napier now moving on to another job because of their success, they hadn't been highlighted or showcased on Saturday night on ESPN in primetime. They played on Thursday night. You've called them. But Saturday night is a whole nother level of exposure for a program that's had a ton of success, but maybe not the exposure. So the opportunity is significant, and I think that's why I'd add 10 more bowl games if we could. I don't want to reward mediocrity. I don't want it to become a – I don't want it
participation
to become a
medal.
100. You know me. I hate that. But I also acknowledge that it might be a participation medal for some. The kids don't know the difference. They want to be there. They want to play, and they want the bowl experience, which is a reward for putting in remarkably hard work throughout the course of 9 months, 10 months, 11 months in some cases to get to that final game.
So you bring that up because prior to hopping on this podcast, we're recording this at about 1 p.m. Eastern on Monday. I was on my coach's call for the Pinstripe Bowl with Maryland, and I was talking to Coach Loxley, and Maryland is it's a program that's trying to find its footing. It's been through a lot in its history, especially over the past 5-6 years. Well, don't tell Locks or anybody at Maryland that this Pinstripe Bowl isn't huge. This is the first time since he's been the head coach there that they're bowl eligible. Yeah. And he was going on and on and on about how, hey, this is the first time in my 10 years as a head coach here at Maryland and as a head coach period that I get the benefit of these extra bowl practices, that I get to build and go down on my roster and get extra practices for these guys and get them ready for another game. I haven't been able to do that yet. And so that's another example of how some people kind of turn their nose up at these pre-New Year's bowls and the Christmas bowls. That was a good way to put it. But for Loxley, who's trying to build something at Maryland, it's everything. It's they needed to win to be bowl eligible. They get that sixth win. Now they get the extra practice. Talia Tungavailoa gets more time to develop. And so in a day and age where, and I'll tell you, I'm the first one to say it, the opting out of bowl games is one of my biggest sports pet peeve. And I understand those who are for it, but you watch some of these earlier bowl games, you're not going to find any opt-outs. No. I mean, I know Virginia Tech's got a handful of them in the Pinstripe Bowl, but look at some of these early bowl games. Why? Cause these players just want to be in a bowl game. There's no opt-out or there's no NFL concern. It's I'm going to play with my teammates for my teammates in a final game of the season. I'm going to enjoy every second of it.
Well, I mean, you occasionally have some opt-outs. You know, good example, Sincere McCormick at UTSA, great running back. He's opted out. A handful of others. And yeah, there might be a few. And I will never criticize a kid for opting out. I would say it's a bad decision in some cases. Not all cases, in some cases. For instance, if you had something nagging all year long,
right?
And I always go back to the original example being Christian McCaffrey. He was the first notable opt-out that really moved the needle, I guess.
McCaffrey and Fournette, same year.
Was it the same year? Because I remember Fournette did it. I felt like McFournette might have been the year after that. Either way, it doesn't matter. Those were really the first two that kind of fell and the opt-outs became part of the norm. Here's where I have a problem, Matt, is our line of questioning in the media, our line of questioning as people that are associated with and love the sport, we almost get to the point where we're interrogating a player. Well, why would you play in that worthless bowl game? I feel like there's a certain line of questioning that I just can't quite comprehend sometimes when it comes to dealing with these opt-outs. And I will never criticize a kid for opting out. I think you leave an opportunity to make a statement on the table by opting out. I saw a kid by the last name of Henniger that I had not watched all year long have 3 sacks and 5 tackles for loss against Oregon State. And now, because of that performance, tell me, if you're a scout, you see that final performance, that's the last data point you see from Nick Henniger before he enters the draft process. Tell me that's not going to have an impact on you. I called a game involving Dante Fowler. And did the Birmingham Bowl ultimately lead to Dante Fowler getting drafted 3rd overall? Probably not. But he was in the Birmingham Bowl against East Carolina, completely took the game over, had 4 sacks, and just a few months later was drafted 3rd overall. So I think you leave a lasting impression on scouts if you go out and have a dominant performance in the bowl game. Now, like I said, if you opt not to take that opportunity, totally up to you. We'll never criticize you. I get it. But I would just have a very difficult time, my own personal feelings about it. I would have a very difficult time standing on the sidelines, watching my brothers and my other teammates out there work and knowing that I could potentially be helping them chase a championship or chase a bowl victory.
The one that got me when we were in the Bahamas preparing for that game with Middle Tennessee.
I'm sure you did a lot of preparation. Preparation with a Mai Tai in hand, correct?
Yeah, that's amazing. Since I got there Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern, I left Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. I definitely had a lot of time to just drink, drink and gamble with Booger McFarland. The one that ended up getting me that I didn't quite understand why was Kenny Pickett. when Kenny Pickett opted out of the his bowl game, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl against Michigan State. I know Kenneth Walker was already out, maybe because he's a running back. I understand that one a little bit more. But if I'm Pickett, and I already made the risky decision, if you deem it risky to come back, he already made the decision to come back and play another year at Pitt.
Right.
This is a year where the quarterback class is wide open. He's right now widely considered to be the top quarterback in this draft class in 2022, but we don't know that yet. Malik Willis played, and he had a hell of a game against Eastern Washington. Who did they play?
Eastern Michigan.
Michigan, yeah. So he had a hell of a game. But Pickett, to do all of this year, be invited to New York, right, come back to opt out now when he could – go from being the top quarterback selected to working his way up the draft board against a really suspect Michigan State pass defense. Mm-hmm. That one just didn't sit well with me because I thought the whole Pickett story was great and what he's done for the Pittsburgh football program. I didn't like that one.
I just think, like I said, it's totally up to him. I get it. I think you're leaving an opportunity to leave no doubt on the table. And think about this. You're the number one quarterback prospect right now. Right now. But I saw Bailey Zappe go out there and throw for 6 touchdowns and set the career or the season touchdown pass record and the season yard record in his bowl game. Matt Corral, right this instant, plans on playing against Baylor. We saw Malik Willis, who is nipping at Kenny Pickett's heels to become the first overall quarterback. We saw him play. So if Kenny Pickett feels as though he has nothing left to prove, by all means, go for it. Why are you playing at the Senior Bowl? So I'm just having a difficult time understanding if it's still up in the air. It's still up in the air. Who's the number one quarterback that's going to be drafted in the 2022 draft? Still up. No one can tell you this. Anyone that does, they're lying. Nobody knows at this point who the first quarterback off the board is going to be. But whoever it is, let's say they come off the board at, say, 8. And then the second quarterback comes off the board at, say, 14. We're talking about $6 or $7 million that's potentially lost from 8 to 14, depending on what the draft slots look like and the salary cap looks like this year. So if I were Kenny Pickett, I would have played. I can't be critical of him. Totally get it. He had a great year. He owes nothing else to Pitt. He's done everything he can possibly do for Pitt, and it's been a remarkable story all year long. But I think right now he leaves the door open for a guy like Matt Corral to go out against a great Baylor defense, throw for 350, run for another 75, and count for 5 total touchdowns. What are the scouts going to say after that performance?
Yeah, and weren't bowl games correct me if I'm wrong, that was kind of the crowning achievement celebration at the end of the year. When did they just become a toss aside? That's what I don't get. Like, fine, I'm old school. Herbie and I talk about every week on this podcast how he and I are both old school when we look at it. We are.
Right.
It's a fact. But I just
– you're very old. You are.
I am. In fact, on this day, I celebrate my birthday today, and I'm 1 year older, and I feel a little bit more old school today because when did we start thinking like bowl games? Like, it's the Peach Bowl. I'm good.
Right.
I've done enough. I don't know, man. Like when you walk into a football facility, what's the first thing you see? Bowl game trophies.
Right.
That's what they have everywhere. So now the bowl game trophy case doesn't matter. And I disagree that Kenny Pickett's done everything he needs to do for Pitt. Go win them a Peach Bowl. Go win a Peach Bowl in a program that Narduzzi's trying to build. Jordan Addison's one of the most talented receivers in the country. He's a sophomore. Like, go finish what you started. I get the, hey, I don't want to risk my NFL future. You make a good point with the Senior Bowl, then why are you playing in that? But when these guys go work out in Arizona – or wherever they do their pre-draft workout, that's a risk. There's an inherent risk in every athletic achievement that you try. So why did bowl games become the, I'm good. You know, I'm good. You guys go ahead. I don't know. I guess I'm old today. I don't know.
It comes from the agents though. And everyone's pushback, and understandably so. It's like, well, the coaches leave. Look at Brian Kelly. You know, I get that. And it's hard for me as a bowl game and a traditionalist like you and Herbie. Like, I couldn't imagine not playing. Like, my final college football game, I went out there along with Mark Ingram, a Heisman Trophy winner, Julio Jones, you know, an all-time great Hall of Fame wide receiver, James Carpenter, who went on to become a first-round pick, Marcell Dareus, who was the third pick overall just a few months later. We all played against Michigan State. We were sitting at 9-3 playing in the Citrus Bowl. At that point, it was the Capital One Bowl. It never even crossed our minds. Like, players play. I mean, that was just what we did. It was just different then. But I do think, though, that agents have worked their way into the equation, and they're saying, well, you can get a head start on your preparation for the next level by ending your college career now and then going and starting your training. I don't think anyone's going to draft Kenny Pickett first quarterback overall to go because of what he runs the 40 in. I don't think they're going to draft him based on what he does in the pro agility. I'm not sure it matters. I think the tape matters and another opportunity to showcase yourself against what is a horrendous pass defense, I don't think would have been the worst idea. But I'm with you 100%. And I get it. Like I said, I don't like it, but I get it. And I won't be critical of the kid. I just hope the kid is making the best decision for himself. And that when we fast forward 15, 20, 25, 30 years from now, when they're a little bit older, I hope they don't have regrets. And I, for one, if I left early and I didn't play that final game with my teammates, and in some cases, my best friends, I would have had regrets. So I'm glad I went out and played. I'm glad all my teammates did. And we all left with a clean bill of health. The only one that didn't was Kirk Cousins that day in 2011, because he got beat up pretty good in a 49-7 rout. So it was a good way to finish our college career. I'll say that.
Yeah, but look at Cousins still having a hell of an NFL career.
Right? I mean, he didn't opt out either.
Paid. what do you think the NFL teams want to see? Do you think they want to see him in the bowl game? Because I do. If I'm an NFL scout and I'm thinking, all right, I might invest my first round pick in a Malik Willis, in a Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
I kind of want to sit back on December 30th or New Year's Day, and I want to watch this guy that I'm interested in one more time. I think the NFL people want to see it.
The sad part is they don't care.
Really?
Yeah. Because if they did, they would hold it against guys.
That's
instead,
true.
We're seeing guys opt out. There's no – if there was actual, like, a legitimate – and we could put this together, the guys that opted out, was their draft stock affected? The answer in most cases is probably not. However, you can all point to the one example that everyone points to, or there's been more than one. I mean, other guys have gotten hurt in bowl games and it's led to subpar draft status. However, Jake Butt is a good example. He played at Michigan, tore his ACL. I believe it was the Orange Bowl. I think it was against Florida State. And he actually got paid cold hard cash because of loss of value insurance. He got drafted, I believe, in the third round, was scheduled to go somewhere maybe late first, early second. He got paid cold, hard cash, tax-free, because of that loss of value. The best example is, of course, Jalen Smith,
yep,
who at Notre Dame blew out his knee, dropped to the second round after being a bona fide top 10 can't-miss pick, falls to the second round, goes to the Cowboys. Well, a little later on down the road, after he makes a full recovery and puts together three incredible seasons, he's the highest-paid linebacker in the NFL. So there's more examples, I think, of guys using the bowl game as a positive as there are guys that got hurt and then seeing their draft stock tumble. But there's always that one possibility. And that's why I would never be critical of a guy that makes that decision. I hope they have all the facts, and I hope that they are comfortable with their decision, knowing the impact it could have on their team and on some of their teammates' reflections of them.
Yeah, and you're right. Being critical, I think, is a good way to put it. I would say, from your perspective, from my perspective, having never played in a bowl game, not understanding. I get it from a – well, I guess that would be mean I understand, but I get, like, from a business standpoint.
Sure.
And I also understand pre-Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette, guys were playing in bowl games every year, and we've been playing football for a long time, and there was never a problem. And that's why I'm a little confused, because pre-McCaffrey, this was never a thing. this was like, well, hell yeah, I'm going to play in my bowl game and I'm going to have a great time doing it. I'm sure there were, if we really poked through the details to find out who, what, when, and where, and why. But I know that it became trendy when that started to occur. And now it's an annual thing.
What I don't like is why do you, if you choose to play, and there've been examples of this too, where a guy has chosen to play and he gets asked, why are you playing? Well, why do you have to justify the decision to play?
Right.
Why? And the best example is actually, it's not related to the bowl games. It was Travis Etienne, who decided after his junior year, you know what, I'm going to go back to Clemson. I love Clemson, and I don't feel like I'm ready yet to enter the NFL. He came back, and people came out of the woods to just destroy them. Why are you coming back? You have nothing left to prove. You won a couple championships. You could potentially be a first-round pick. Why would you come back? No, he doesn't have to answer that question. Like, he chose to come back because he wanted to further his college experience and that the NFL would be there. I don't like that we have to now justify why we're coming back, why we're playing in a bowl game. Maybe we just want to. Maybe we just love to play. And I wish we could kind of get away from that line of questioning that we often see when a guy makes a decision that whoever the media member or the fan or, you know, us or anybody, I don't like the line of questioning that they're having to receive. And I don't like the vitriol. It's almost vitriol that's spewed in their direction if someone chooses not to just run for the money right now. Guys are allowed to make their own decision. It's their journey. And I don't think we should ever be critical of that.
Right. It's because the whole narrative is flipped. The whole thing is flipped. It's flipped. It's a player sport now. And I'm not saying that it never should be a player sport, but it's all about the players now. Transfer portal, NIL, opting out. I mean, that's who it is. That's the sport. And when a player like Etienne or when someone does decide to say, hey, you know what? I mean, can you imagine now if a player of Matt Leinart's caliber made the decision that Matt Leinart made when he decided to come back? I remember that. It's like, oh, awesome. It's great for USC. Matt Leinart's coming back.
He's going to win two Heismans.
Right? He was the number one overall pick the year he could have come out.
Right.
But he didn't come out. I mean, there were some of these guys, that these high-level guys that decided to come back, this was 10 years ago. I mean, now the sky would fall. Like, what are you doing? You're throwing away your future. Well, maybe my future is college. Maybe I didn't know throwing away my future was throwing away a college degree. Or I didn't know going back for a senior year of college to play with my best friends was such a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it's almost,
could you imagine what if Trevor Lawrence would have said, I'm coming back
right now. And that Matt Leinart's the comp.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's kind of taken away a little bit from bowl season. You know, now we're waiting to see what Ohio State players are going to opt out of the Rose Bowl. You know, is it going to be both Olave and Garrett Wilson? What's going to happen there? But now it's just become who's next. And I don't like that being the attention, because from a year where we hardly had any bowl games because of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is still ongoing, and fans in the stands, last thing I need this year is to not celebrate the bowl games.
Right. Oh, I whether they play or not, I can tell you what I'm going to do.
I'm watching.
I'm going to be as dialed into the Frisco Football Classic presented by Ryan, which was added because we had too many bowl eligible teams. I'm going to be as dialed into that as I am the Sugar, as I am the Rose, as I am the College Football Playoff, because these are examples of games that should be celebrated. And I think getting to a bowl game, having the kids go through what they went through, in 2020, several of which saying, man, I just can't take it anymore. We're going to shut down. We're not going to have our bowl experience, because it wasn't an authentic bowl experience, because they were traveling the day before. It was like a road game.
Right.
And a lot of teams said, I'm not interested in that. And that to me was, in some ways, and without, kind of for lack of a better word, it was a little bit devastating, because I can remember vividly playing in the Shreveport Independence Bowl twice, by the way. And I can remember getting on a plane with one of my teammates that had never been on a flight before, going and staying in a hotel He had never stayed in a hotel that nice before. My roommate had never stayed in a hotel that nice before. And we had had, and it was really, and he'll be the first one to tell you this. It was the first vacation he'd ever been on in his life at 18 years old. He had never experienced that. And it was to Shreveport, Louisiana. He was from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And he had never been on a vacation in his life. And to go to Shreveport for a week with shows and meals and entertainment and just an incredible bowl experience was one of the greatest weeks of his life. And we still are in contact, and he still talks fondly about each and every bowl experience that he had because he'd never had anything like that. And our last one was at Disney World. And it was as if it was the greatest thing in the world. We were in Orlando, and to be able to go to Epcot and the Magic Kingdom and have free tickets every day that you wanted them was an experience unlike that of any other. And I think that that is something that's lost on a lot of people that don't get to see it. And I hope that people understand what these games really do mean. It's the game is the game. And when you show up and when you lace them up, let's go play, we're going to go win. But it's the 4 and 5 days leading up when you go to the children's hospital, when you go and you do things within the community to bring light to maybe things that aren't, you do a food drive. I did a food drive in New Orleans for one of our bowl games. I mean, we did all kinds of neat things. And those are the things you don't see, but they make a significant impact on the community. And it impacts you as players because you get to recognize yet again just how lucky you are to be able to play college football.
Yeah, and for those of us that are fortunate enough to cover these bowl games, when I was in the Bahamas briefly for the Bahamas Bowl, I mean, just to see the Middle Tennessee State and Toledo guys walking through the aquarium with their phones out, like, oh, right. My God, I've never seen a fish before. Like, I've never seen in person. And these guys, I mean, the wonder in these kids' eyes is just incredible. I want to get you out of here on this one because...
Well, answer me this. Is the Bahamas Bowl gift, because I called it a couple of years ago, is the bowl gift still a bathing suit?
Yes.
Okay, because it was the funniest thing, and me and my wife were walking, we're like, you could tell all the players, not only were they bigger than everybody else walking around, every single player had a matching bathing suit. Yep. It was like a uniform. Yep. It's like, oh, well, there's a Buffalo player. Oh, well, hang on, there's a player. They were just various colors. One was Buffalo colors, and one was Charlotte colors. They were playing the Charlotte 49ers. It was just the funniest thing ever. Swim they were suit, all so fired up.
The long sleeve sun shirt, you got that going on. It was all, yeah. So today there's a team playing in a bowl game that otherwise no one would pay attention to. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but Old Dominion made a bowl game.
Yeah.
How big is Old Dominion playing Tulsa in a Myrtle Beach Bowl presented by Tax Act? In this whole theme of the podcast of bowl games matter, for ODU, it's historic. It is absolutely historic, which makes today's game a fun watch.
No doubt about it. It's the second bowl game in ODU history. And what Ricky Ronnie has done there, and y'all, you know how easy it is nowadays at the world of negativity and social media. When you start 1-6, you know how easy it is? Guys would be jumping in the portal. Guys would be quitting. Guys would shut it down. Guys would say, oh, no, work out. You kidding? We're done. Our season's over. To go from 1-6 to 6-6 on the heels of a 5-game winning streak is outrageous. And then when you look back and what led to ODU starting 1-6, let me list through the teams that they lost to in their first 7 games of the year. Wake Forest, ACC division champs. They beat Hampton. All right, so that was their one win in the first 7 games of the season. They lost at Liberty. No shame in that. Liberty's a team that played in the bowl game, just dominated Eastern Michigan. They lost to Buffalo by 1, by the way. Buffalo ended up having a difficult year, but losing by 1 against Buffalo is nothing to be ashamed of. Then you lose at UTEP, which bowl team. At Marshall, bowl team. Bailey Zappe and Western Kentucky beat them as well, bowl team. So they lost to 5 bowl teams, all of which have gone on to have really nice seasons.
Yeah.
Well, the thing flipped quickly. They beat Middle Tennessee State. They beat Charlotte convincingly to get to bowl eligible. Just did a really nice job there in the last 5 games of the season. So these are the opportunities for them that are significant, and to be able to play there in Myrtle Beach in a very – you know, relatively close to their school, a drivable game for a lot of their student body. It's going to be awesome. They don't get opportunities to play on ESPN either. I mean, they're on ESPN Plus and smaller, you know, smaller platforms. So this is big for their program and for what Ricky Ronnie's built.
So if we've done one thing on today's edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast, if McElroy and Matt have done one thing for you, it's that embrace every bowl game opportunity you get. It's why we love the sport. You play it for 12, 13 weeks. You get this opportunity. And if you would normally be one of those people, it's like, I'm not watching ODU and Tulsa. Watch. Because for the player on ODU and Tulsa, this is their New Year's Six. This right. is their college football playoff semifinal. So look at us. We're spreading holiday cheer and joy here on December 20th. McElroy, appreciate you hopping in, man. This was fun.
No, this was a blast, buddy. I appreciate you having me, man.
Everybody have a good Christmas, a safe, happy holidays to you and yours. And we'll be back next Monday here on the ESPN College Football Podcast.